Hey friends, Ben here. I don't have to tell you how the world has turned upside down since the last time we recorded the Perfect Bound podcast. In that time, the governor of Washington, like many governors across the nation, have instituted a stay-at-home order and for non-essential businesses to close for the foreseeable future. That includes Comic Extension and Corner Comics. So right now, Chris and Nicole are dealing with all of that and, well, doing a podcast right now just isn't a priority at this time. So the Perfect Bound podcast is going to take a break. We've had a good run putting out a show every week for over 5 years. And, well, you know, if it takes a global pandemic to break that streak, I'm okay with that. We have one more episode in the can for you. This episode was recorded in October of last year, and I've just been holding on to it in case I needed a show to fill in an empty week. And, well, you know, the time is nigh. Sadly, it's a show in which Nicole was unable to be with us, but we have over 5 years worth of stuff, so feel free to peruse our archive at perfectboundpodcast.com. And finally, a GoFundMe has been set up to cover the payroll costs of Comic Extension and Corner Comics employees during this hard time. I hope that if you've enjoyed listening to the show, you'll head over there and donate a few bucks to make sure Chris, Nicole, and everybody who works at the best comic book stores in the Pacific Northwest don't miss a paycheck during this hard time. You can find a link to that in today's show notes and also at perfectboundpodcast.com. We also have a Facebook page where we'll keep you all up to date on when we'll return. So head on over there and give us a like, as well as Comics Dungeon, Corner Comics, and The Panel Jumper if you haven't already. Thanks again for listening to the show all these years. We really had a blast recording them for you. We hope you stay safe, stay healthy. We'll get through this, and we'll see you on the other side. Now, let's get to the show. Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by The Panel Jumper and Comic Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
Now, normally, Nicole Lamb is with us, but she was recently sucked into the maws of hell, but I saw some Instagram posts, and she's almost on her way out. She's bringing some cute demons with her. We look forward to that. I hope nothing bad will happen. But she will be back with us next week.
Make sure to get the incense ready and draw the pentagram on the floor and sacrifice a goat or no vegan option.
That's right. Yeah, no hurting the fuzzy.
Yeah.
Sacrifice some soy.
Yes.
Anyway.
Eggplants. We will slaughter the eggplants.
So, what a horrible scenario. Let's talk about horror, friends. There's a new Vault comic called Black Stars Above, which is described as cosmic horror. And there's a bunch of different subgenres of horror. And cosmic horror is actually something that I had never heard of. I may have heard of it, but I don't know what it exactly means. So let's talk about cosmic horror.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to give me a rundown of what they think cosmic horror is?
Basically for me, because I think a lot of people tend to just assume that's tentacle horror, and that's a part of it. That's a nice chunk of it, because it's all Lovecraftian generally. But for me, it's more about the existential dread of your place in existence. Mm-hmm. And the creatures that are beyond the edge of our universe and our perception, that basically once you see them, you go insane, because it also puts in mind that, you know, you are completely insignificant. Mm-hmm. And do not matter. Mm-hmm. There's not that much in the way of cinema that hits that for me. There was a movie called The Void released, like, I don't know, 2017. And that gets a bit of it. That one definitely felt like they were fans of John Carpenter and fans of Lovecraft, and they put two great tastes that taste great together. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend watching it. It definitely starts more traditional kind of body horror, and then it kind of leaps into the cosmic element a little bit later on. I can't remember if it was produced or directed. I think it's just produced by the guy who did The Witch with two V's.
Yeah.
So that's something if you want like a sampling of cosmic horror. There was also some other movie on Netflix that's like about two brothers that grew up in a cult, and they come back to the cult, and mm-hmm. apparently it's a Cthulhu-ish thing. Mm. But again, less water, more deep space.
How about Event Horizon?
Yes.
Because that movie's never worked for me, but I know so many people that hold that film up as one of their favorite horror films, and I'm like, I don't. It doesn't. It's never worked on me.
I did really love that movie when I was younger. I just rewatched it. It is kind of terrible. Mm-hmm. It has elements I like, but it's more of just The Shining in space.
Right.
But it's supposed to have cosmic horror as an idea. Mm-hmm. It's just that it plays too deeply into the short explanation of, like, they opened a portal through hell. And it's just like, I don't think it's hell. I think it's just something so horrible. But all of a sudden, the people coming out of it knew Latin. So I guess you're going with hell, which is stupid.
Okay.
The Doom video games had too. It's just like, we're making portals in space. They just happen to go to, you know, the Christian version of hell or Catholic version or whatever. And it's just sort of like, meh, that loses some of the pizzazz for me.
There's, you know? We talked earlier before we got on mic about, you know, what, well, most assuredly, the origin of our concept of cosmic horror starts with Lovecraft and his ilk at the time, like Arthur Machen and other authors like that. Lovecraft was probably the most successful at it, but it's and Chris said, well, you know, Cthulhu itself, the story Call of Cthulhu, is too earth-centered. You know, the creature lives under the ocean. But there's the cult. There's the cult that worships him, and this aspect of the storytelling of the whole pantheon of these demonic godlike beings who don't care about our existence because they don't even acknowledge us, and these poor tragic souls who gather together out of fear and loathing to worship a being that doesn't care about them. And I think that's a pretty succinct criticism about how humanity sees its place in the universe and how horrified it is that no one cares.
Yeah.
So there's that, to me, that's cosmic horror.
That level of nihilism as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was, what Lovecraft captured very powerfully in his stories, but you know, the question is, has anything captured that or taken it a step further since then? That's a really, really good question, because I don't know.
I felt that Alan Moore's Providence did.
Sure.
It captured those tones much better and included all the different levels of the pantheon. When we're talking about Lovecraft, the stuff that speaks more as cosmic horror to me is the stuff that deals more with, like, Nyarlathotep and, like, the dream quest of Unknown Kadath and things like that. Because you're dealing with character or creatures that are actually, like, the great-grandfathers of Cthulhu. Mm-hmm. Like, Cthulhu's just, like, a tiny guy in the mythos. He's kind of like, well, Alan Moore made him the Jesus of the pantheon almost. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, but, like, Azathoth is, like, the idiot god, the chaos, the pure chaos creature. So it's like that concept of just, like, you can't conceive it because it's beyond, you know, beyond any level. And not too many people have captured that lately, at least not in screen media.
Well, because I don't think you really can't. I think by virtue of that form of literature, you can't, because it's that which is not spoken and that which is left unsaid.
Yeah.
And that's where, to me, always authentic horror lies. It's like an author knows how to paint the surface of that story, but that dread, that unfathomable, horrific entity beyond that veil, you can't see that. You know, Morrison did that The Nameless series, which I thought came really close to capturing that in comic book form. Unfortunately for me, it just was so damn gory. It's like there's just so much evisceration and viscera and blood and gore. I think that existential dread was in the story.
Yeah.
But sometimes, and I think it's worth tracking down, but just be forewarned, it is really, really gory.
It's also experimental in the narrative.
Yeah.
It time jumps.
Yeah.
That's an element of cosmic horror, is that your concepts don't matter, so any concept of time is thrown out the window.
Sure.
And I actually consider, so there's Slender Man, If you're not familiar with Slenderman, Google him up. He's an internet created monster. Mm-hmm. But there was a group called the Marble Hornets that did a YouTube series that was basically like found footage style Slenderman story. But they entered a sequence where a character got lost in a house, and the house started. What's the word? Euclidean.
Non-Euclidean
mm-hmm. geometry, and it's that concept of like nothing that's in the space makes sense, and you're going slightly insane because of the weird repetition.
You can't get your head around
it. Like, that's a little bit more cosmic horror to me, even though that's happening on a local basis in the story.
Right.
That creatures can come from that place too, and you don't know what they want. Mm-hmm. You know? And Slenderman happens to have tentacles, so I guess you get the best of both worlds there.
Well, and Slenderman, I think, actually is a really good example of a byproduct of cosmic horror, because this was a character that's become contemporary myth that was created through a website and photoshopped images and a mythology evolved around it through social media, and then two little girls in Wisconsin tried to kill a third to appease the Slender Man, and they really believed this was a thing.
Yep. He became mimetic, and there was actually a comic, I think, called Mimetic as well, that I guess that one would count as cosmic horror. Basically, somebody created something called the Happy Time Sloth, and it was a meme of a sloth giving a thumbs up.
Yeah.
But in the story, if you saw it within like a couple hours, you would go insane. And the story follows a couple people over the course of a couple days who managed to avoid seeing it on the internet, and everybody else kind of goes off into the middle of nowhere and merge into flesh spires into the great unknown and go into another dimension. And it's just like, that's, yeah, okay, Whoa. That's fairly cosmic horror, you know? And it's basically that elimination of your mind because it's so pathetic.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know? The terrifyingly unknowable is how one article put it.
Yeah.
Are there any other examples of cosmic horror in comics?
I should have put it together.
Well,
there's
that the list. Nameless, or Nameless it's just called, which is Grant Morrison, and that was an Image book. It was a limited series. I think it was.
I feel his Invisibles, and what was the one after the Invisibles?
The Filth.
The Filth. Yeah. Filth has some cosmic horror in it.
Definitely. Well, he tries to get that into Doom Patrol too.
Yes.
His Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
You know, these very nebulous entities that we can't see in our reality. That maybe that's part of it. It's like they exist behind a veil. Our reality is a mere veil that they're hiding behind.
Yeah, because he had like an anti-god that was consuming things, and the only way they could stop it was to slow him down to the pace where like your pencil that's missing, that's the anti-god eating your pencil. Doom Patrol would be a good, basically just go to Moore and Life and that Liefeld and Morrison.
Yep.
Actually, if you want existential horror, go read Liefeld too.
I found a Paste magazine article that's called Tentacles and Madness, 10 Comics That Continue H.P. Lovecraft's Horror Legacy.
Nice.
Yeah.
And number one is Hellboy.
Yeah.
Nice. Would you consider that?
Mm. Yep.
All right.
It's influenced.
It's influenced, but it's... Okay. Our Hellboy's not horrific. there are aspects. But anyway, keep going.
The Wake is number two.
Oh. Yeah, I need to reread that because I never quite took it as such. It's more post-apocalyptic, but in a different branch.
I never got through the whole thing.
Yeah.
I was intrigued by the first story arc.
They were evil mermaids, so I just couldn't categorize
them. Now you ruined it for me.
I said it within the first issue.
The next one is Alan Moore's Neonomicon.
Yeah, that's Providence.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
That feeds into Providence.
Fall of Cthulhu, obviously. Yeah. This is a boom title.
Yeah.
Fatal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
More monstery focused, I thought.
Well, it's film noir and Narlathotep detective story.
Yeah.
IDW's The Squidder.
Yeah, I never read.
I'm not familiar.
They call it a Mad Max style hard ass in a post apocalyptic world overrun by squid monsters.
Yeah, okay.
It's mostly just because it's squiddy. Yeah.
Lock and Key.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's because I think I saw this. When I did my quiz time last time, I saw this article. they mention it's kind of a subtle thing, but by the time you get to the end of Lock and Key, it's more obvious.
Yeah.
There are creatures in another dimension. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Spoilers.
Yeah, because the nemesis character in the story is just an extension of something that they can't see.
Yeah.
That is the body of one of their classmates that was taken over, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was mentioned in your last quiz time, Neil Gaiman's Only the End of the World Again.
Yeah, are you?
And number 9, The Chronicles of Dr. Herbert West, which sounds like it's, again, based directly off of Lovecraft.
That was published by Zenoscope, so just don't. Just don't.
Okay.
Skip that.
And finally, Colder.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which is...
Paul Tobin wrote that, I think, and Juan Ferreira did the art. The Dark Horse.
Oh, yeah. Paul Tobin and Juan Ferreira.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that one. It was, I could see. Oh, it's Lovecraftian. I don't know if I want to say cosmic horror, but yeah, that one's really good. I highly recommend it. It's really creepy. It's basically there's a creature that eats people's sanity, and sometimes you go into the dreamscape and it's this really messed up other dimension. And there's some pretty creepy elements to it, so it does feel Lovecraftian at times.
All right,
yeah,
cool. And that's Pace Magazine's top 10 cosmic horror titles. Do we have any final things to say about this particular subgenre of horror?
Of cosmic horror?
Of cosmic horror.
I wish there was more.
Yeah?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like there's enough, and that it almost seems pigeonholed. Because when people think cosmic horror, they just automatically think Cthulhu and squids.
Right.
And it's just like, no, I want to get into the really creepier mental aspects about it.
Yeah.
And I just, there's just not enough of it. The only people willing to do it take way too much drugs.
All right. So. Cool. Well, let's move on to book report, everybody. And Cole Hornaday, let's start with you.
Well, I received a great piece of joy and loveliness in the mail this week, or actually it was 3 weeks ago now, but you may recall that I shared, reviewed my friend Kurt Ankeny's biographical book called In Pieces a couple of years ago, and that was a fine piece of work, and I liked it, but Kurt recently published Pleading with Stars, and these are his short stories that he's published between 2014 and 2019. Those folks who are our panel jumper Patreon supporters will get a thank you card from Ben and myself that is a commissioned portrait that Kurt did of Ben Lawrence and I that I think is quite lovely. You can find it on, I believe you can find it on the panel jumper page. But these are short stories of Kurt's that I've read over the years. And yeah, let's just get it out of the way that I am biased.
I think we figured that part out.
Yeah, I've known Kurt for a long time. But what excites me so much is that he has matured as an artist and a storyteller to the point where I can freely say we need to pay attention to what he's doing because he will become a rock star. So I've read a lot of these short stories before, but when he was doing indie festivals and fairs across the country, he'd printed them on newsprint. And again, if you're one of our Patreon supporters, you will be getting some of Kurt's older newsprints because he donated all of those to me. So that'll be another one of your one of your rewards for supporting the show. But these are all in color on nice heavy paper stock, they're different stories there's some slice of life stories, that are some speculative and science fiction vignettes, but every one of them has a point, and nearly all of them leave you both elated and sad, or at least moved in some capacity. They're deep pieces that sort of take you out of your comfort zone and deliver you to someplace new. There's an incredible use of texture and color in his work. Some are painted, some are done with colored pencils, a lot of pen and ink, and he does a lot of experimenting with different ink brushes and washes and color styles and themes. And I just think this is one of the most lovely books. I think I would have been excited about this book had not an old friend of mine done it. I really would like to believe that. Let's see, what else do I want to say that isn't just, more hapless praise.
Is he doing stuff for Comics Journal
Thank
Online?
Thank you very much. That was what I was trying to remember to say. Yes. So, and you can also catch Kurt's painted daily diary on Comics Journal. And that's very, very exciting too. So he's come into his own. I think Pleading with Stars is incredibly worth your time. It's 1995. It's published by Ad House Books. And I got a preliminary artist copy or publisher copy, and hopefully this will be available through whatever independent distributor that Chris uses.
There's a couple, so who knows?
Yeah, but I highly recommend this, and I'm really looking forward to what Kurt does next.
Cool. Pleading with Stars by Kurt Ankeny. Thank you, Cole. Chris Gasseau, what do you got for us?
Manga. So I saw this in the order form, and I was like, oh, God, I hope this is great, because it looks great. It features a cyborg with a gun for a head, and it's called No Guns Life, story and art by Tatsuko Karasuma. And it is great. It's basically cyberpunk noir, and it's got it follows some basic tropes. The guy was in the army during one of the last wars, and they call people that have been cybernetically changed to become weapons the extended, and he is let's see, what is his full name again? Juzo the Resolver. And he's a private eye who just takes cases to he'll babysit people, he'll hunt down people, he'll look for people, and he goes back to his apartment one day, and somebody broke in, and it's a cyborg that's on the run from this huge corporation that is taking advantage of these cyborgs that are now living weapons. And so it follows all the different tones and I don't want to say cliches, but familiar storytelling elements and tools of noir, but it's got amazing artwork, and he's an interesting character because he has a literal revolver for a head with a handle in the back, and sometimes people will try to pull the trigger and they're like, you don't like your trigger being pulled. He's like, no, leave me alone. And so yeah, it's just really cool, really good action. If you like crime noir, it's got that. It's if you like cyberpunk, if you like manga robots, it's kind of got everything for me. So highly recommend it. It's a pretty good chunky read for $13. And I think I've already ordered volume 2, so hopefully that comes soon. So No Guns Life.
No Guns Life.
Yes.
Cool. Thank you, Chris. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com, and our friends get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time this week. The questions come to us from me.
You?
Me! We spoke about cosmic horror in this episode. Let's revisit one of my favorite horror properties, The Evil Dead. Here are 5 questions about Ash, Linda, the Deadites, and that damned cabin in the woods. Number 1. Many filmmakers get their start in Hollywood doing thankless jobs on low-budget films just to get the experience. Who got one of their first professional experiences on 1981's The Evil Dead? A. Quentin Tarantino, who was Sam Raimi's assistant director. B. Joel Cohen, who was the assistant editor. Or C. Judd Apatow, who appeared as a deadite during reshoots after all the original actors had up and left.
C?
It is not C.
Oh.
Cole, do you have an answer?
It's not.
I guess?
It's not Joel Cohen, is it?
It is Joel Cohen.
Oh, wow.
3 years later, Joel and Ethan Cohen produced Blood Simple with the help of their new friends Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell.
Wow.
Number 2, 1987's Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn, is often considered a remake of the original Evil Dead. Why? A. Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell were unhappy with how the original turned out, so they pulled a George Lucas before that was a thing and reshot it the way they originally wanted. B, because it was, no other explanation needed. Or C, the rights to show scenes from the original could not be obtained to recap what happened, so the beginning was remade to explain how Ash got to the cabin.
C.
It is
yeah.
C.
Yeah.
I have no further details on that. Number three, 1992's Army of Darkness, my personal favorite of the franchise and the first movie I saw out of all of them, saw Ash transported back in time to fight the Deadites during the Middle Ages. What was the original name of the film? This is not a multiple choice. What was the original name of Army of Darkness?
Ash versus the Deadites?
No.
Hmm.
It's a clever pun on the name. They're in the Middle Ages. The Medieval Dead.
Oh, no.
That's a true fact. Bonus question. Along with Ash, his car was also transported back in time. What was the make and model of the car? All right. I'm not going to wait for you to think of it. It's the Oldsmobile Delta 88, or just the Delta. Number four, Fede Alvarez's 2013 remake, simply titled Evil Dead, uses a lot of fake blood. If it doesn't hold the record for amount of fake blood in the movie, it should. 300 gallons of fake blood was used in the original movie. How many gallons of fake blood was used in the remake? A, 10,000, B, 70,000, or C, 140,000?
B?
It is B, 70,000 gallons of fake blood, which is all basically stage blood, caro syrup and food coloring. And finally, number five, from 2015 to 2018, Ash vs. Evil Dead aired on the Starz Network. I loved this show so much, and it makes me sad that it's gone. In season one, Ash performs a stunt in the Delta called a power slide, which is a stunt that requires the driver to steer the car into a tight turn at high speeds and apply the parking brake, which causes the back tires to lose traction with the road and slide into a turn. Bruce Campbell claims which TV star taught him how to do this maneuver. A. William Shatner, who is known to perform the stunt regularly on TJ Hooker. B. David Hasselhoff, who is known to perform the stunt regularly on Knight Rider. Or C. Tom Wopat, who is known to perform the stunt regularly on Dukes of Hazzard.
Hasselhoff?
It is not David Hasselhoff.
It's Wopat.
It is not Wopat. It is William Shatner, who is known to perform the stunt regularly on TJ Hooker.
Wow.
That is quiz time. And that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.